Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
First, we report on the latest news in United States politics. March 1st was Super Tuesday, but March 15th will be key for candidates against Donald Trump for Republican presidential nomination. Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton strengthened their control of their party's presidential race after big wins on Super Tuesday. But 16 more states and territories will hold primary elections or caucuses in the next 2 weeks. That includes the two large states of Florida and Ohio. Republican Governor John Kasich of Ohio and Florida Senator Marco Rubio are looking to win the primaries in their home states. Both Kasich and Rubio have finished well behind businessman Trump and Texas Senator Ted Cruz in almost all of the nominating elections. Political experts say their candidacies may not survive a loss at home. On the Democratic side, former Secretary of State Clinton is heading into Michigan with a lead over Senator Bernie Sanders of Maine. The two are scheduled to debate Sunday in Flint. The city is dealing with a drinking water crisis. High lead levels were discovered in city drinking water and residents. Clinton won Tuesday's primary votes in Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, Massachusetts, Tennessee, Texas, and Virginia. Sanders captured his home state of Vermont, as well as Colorado, Minnesota, and Oklahoma. With the victories, Clinton now has over 1,000 delegates. That is nearly three times larger than the 373 delegates for Sanders. On the Republican side, Trump took Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, Massachusetts, Tennessee, Virginia, and Vermont. Senator Ted Cruz took his home state of Texas, as well as Oklahoma and Alaska. Florida Senator Marco Rubio picked up his first win of the primary season in Minnesota. With the victories, Trump has 316 delegates and Ted Cruz has 226. A Democratic Party candidate must win 2,383 delegates to get the presidential nomination. A Republican Party candidate must win 1,237 delegates. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says the next few days are very important in finding a way to permanently end the conflict in Syria. Christopher Jones Cruz reports.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad said Tuesday the suspension of fighting in his country after 5 years of war is, in his words, a glimmer of hope. The Syrian leader spoke on German television. He said his government will work to make the ceasefire permanent. Pro-government fighters and opposition forces in Syria have agreed to stop fighting. But the ceasefire does not include Islamic State militants or supporters of Jabhat al-Nusra, a group linked to al-Qaeda. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said the next few days are very important to strengthening the truce and ending the conflict. He spoke to reporters Monday in Washington. Kerry said he and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov agree there have been some violations of the truce since it began on Saturday. But he said they do not want to talk about them publicly. He said a group led by the United States and Russia will investigate every reported violation and urge all sides to honor the truce agreement. Kerry said it is a difficult process, but the fact is that we need to stop the cycle of fighting and of bloodshed that is destroying Syria. It is that simple. On Monday, Syrian rebels reported that government forces attacked opposition-controlled villages and towns 26 times. Riyad Hijab is the top negotiator for the rebels. In a letter to the United Nations, he said the Syrian government has continued to target populated areas using helicopter raids, using explosive barrels, resulting in a large number of fatalities and causing significant injuries, most of whom were innocent women and children. On Sunday, Hijab said Russian fighter jets launched 26 airstrikes on territory held by opposition groups, which have agreed to stop fighting. Rebels say a map released at the beginning of the truce by the Russian Ministry of Defense is filled with mistakes. The map is said to show the positions of moderate opposition groups in Syria. The rebels have asked the UN to make a new map. On Sunday, Russian ceasefire monitors said they have recorded 9 violations of the truce. They blamed rebels for most of them. Separately on Monday, the UN and aid groups began transporting supplies to areas that need them. They hope to reach more than 150,000 Syrians in areas that have been affected by the fighting. Yaqub El-Hilo is the UN humanitarian chief for Syria. He said the ceasefire is the best opportunity that the Syrian people have had over the last 5 years for lasting peace and stability. Stefan de Mistura is the special UN diplomat for Syria. He has said that if the truce remains in effect and aid groups continue to be able to bring supplies to areas that need them, he will restart Syrian peace talks on March 9th. That is 2 days later than the date he set earlier. A UN spokesman said the delay was needed to let officials deal with logistical and practical matters. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Europe could soon explode into uncontrollable and widespread violence because of the refugee crisis. That warning comes from UNHCR, or the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. The agency reports that 24,000 refugees and migrants in Greece need shelter. This includes about 8,500 people near the border with Macedonia. It says there are shortages of food, shelter, and water. It says the areas are unclean. Vincent Cochetel is the top representative of UNHCR in Europe. He says migrants and refugees fleeing the Balkans are stopped at border crossings. He says they do not understand that they cannot flee to other countries. Cochetel says those countries must first permit refugees to enter. Not all of the refugees will get permission, he says. There is a lot of frustration building up, which may lead to acts of violence, he says. A peaceful protest Monday near the Macedonian border became violent when police used tear gas to force refugees and migrants to move away from a border fence. Almost 132,000 people have crossed the Mediterranean Sea this year. Half of them are women or children. That is more than the number who made the dangerous journey in the first 6 months of 2015. Almost all of them have landed in Greece. UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards says the European Union must move forward with the plan it agreed to last year to settle the refugees equally among its 28 members. It should concern everyone that despite commitments to relocate 66,400 refugees from Greece, states have so far pledged only 1,539 spaces, and only 325 actual relocations have occurred, he said. The UNHCR says Greece must quickly increase its ability to care for the large number of people that are entering the country, and it said the EU member states must work together more closely. Separately, the American general who commands the North Atlantic Treaty Organization said violent extremists, criminals, and foreign fighters are among the refugees who are entering Europe every day. Air Force General Philip Breedlove spoke before the Senate Armed Services Committee on Tuesday. He said, terrorists are hiding among the refugees, increasing the possibility of attacks. He said the Islamic State terrorist group is, in his words, spreading like a cancer, threatening Europe and the United States. He said the Russian and Syrian governments are using migration to weaken Europe. He said Syrian attacks on its civilians are a way to force them to flee and become a problem for other countries. Breedlove said forcing people to flee to Europe helps Russia meet its goal of using non-military efforts to weaken NATO and the European Union.
The conflict between the Al-Shabaab terror group and security forces in Somalia continued Tuesday. Dan Friedel has more.
The Al-Shabaab terror group continued its latest offensive in Somalia on Tuesday. Witnesses and officials say 16 people died and at least 10 others were wounded in attacks. 4 government soldiers died when a landmine exploded outside Mogadishu. They were part of a convoy of 3 vehicles going from Mogadishu to Afgoye. The explosion hurt 2 other soldiers. At least 5 others were killed in fights between Al-Shabaab militants and local security forces in Somalia's central Galmudug region. The Galmudug forces attacked an Al-Shabaab base in El Abdi village, 60 kilometers north of Harodere. The regional security minister said his troops attacked the Al-Shabaab fighters because they were threatening villagers and asking for money. Al-Shabaab blocked the villagers' access to water wells. A spokesman for the southeastern part of Somalia said 7 Al-Shabaab militants were killed during a battle 40 kilometers west of Kismayo. The security forces in Kismayo said they launched the attack after learning there were Al-Shabaab forces in the area. I'm Dan Friedel.
The International Organization for Migration says it is helping thousands of people leave Libya because they have been abused by police and militias. Mario Ritter tells us more.
More migrants are leaving Libya after being abused, mostly by police and militias. The International Organization for Migration reports it has helped thousands of people leave Libya to return to Burkina Faso, Gambia, and Senegal, among other countries. A few days ago, the group returned 117 migrants to Burkina Faso, including 5 women and 2 children. Itai Viriri is a spokesman for the group. He said the migrants told the IOM about poor treatment by militias and employers. He said many young men told the group they had worked for weeks without being paid. He said the group has examples of young men who were working in construction who, every time they got paid, they were raided. He said militias took the migrants' money during the raids. He said the migrants had no place to report the crimes. A recent United Nations report said government officials, armed groups, and smugglers have violated the rights of migrants in Libya. Many migrants have been detained without charges for long periods, and have been tortured, forced to work without pay, and have suffered other kinds of abuse, the report said. Viriri told VOA that some African migrants reported being beaten and threatened with other forms of poor treatment. He says there have been a few cases where people were abducted with the expectation that ransom would be paid. So, here we have one young man who said, if they are arrested in Libya or taken in by these militias, they are expected to pay about $700. I'm Mario Ritter.
A dispute between Apple and the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI, has put law enforcement and technology in conflict. This could affect privacy, safety, and security in the U.S. The dispute involves the FBI investigation of the mass shootings in San Bernardino, California, last December. Saeed Farouk and his wife, Tashfeen Malik, killed 14 people and wounded 22 others. Farouk and Malik were killed in a gun battle with police later the same day. Investigators found an iPhone that Farouk had used. It was given to Farouk by the Department of Public Health in California, where he worked. That department gave the FBI permission to unlock the phone. But no one has the password. Farouk is dead, and the phone is locked. The FBI wants the data on the phone. It could guess at passwords until it finds one that unlocks the phone. But after 10 failed attempts to enter a password, the phone will automatically erase all the data it has stored. The data will simply disappear. On February 16, 2016, a court ordered Apple to cooperate with the FBI. After that order was issued, Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, said Apple would not comply. The FBI said its goal is to conduct a thorough investigation of the crime. That includes seeing the data on Farouk's iPhone. We simply want the chance, with a search warrant, to try to guess the terrorist passcode without the phone essentially self-destructing, and without it taking a decade to guess correctly, said FBI Director James Comey. Apple CEO Cook published a letter explaining Apple's position. He said he is concerned that Apple is being forced to create software that makes the iPhone less secure. Once created, he argues, criminals could use the software to unlock other iPhones and steal data. The FBI says they only want Apple to create software for one phone. But Apple disagrees. Once this software is created, other law enforcement agencies and governments could try to force Apple to use this software, the technology company argues. In an interview, Cook said, "There's probably more information about you on your phone than there is in your house. Our smartphones are loaded with intimate conversations, our financial data, our health records. They're also loaded with the location of our kids, in many cases. So it's not just about privacy, it's about public safety." Apple also says that it fears the government could force the company to create other software. Apple argues that the government could require it to create software that turns on the iPhone's camera or microphone to secretly record video and sound. The FBI disputes Apple's claim that the request violates privacy rights. It argues that Farouk has died and does not have rights to privacy. Further, it says, the owner of the phone has agreed to the search of the phone and to Apple's helping the FBI. On Monday, a court in New York State ruled that Apple did not have to assist the FBI in a similar case unlocking an iPhone that involved drug charges. On Tuesday, a committee of U.S. Congress heard from both Apple and FBI about the San Bernardino case. The court will hear the case on March 22nd. As this dispute involves public and personal safety, privacy rights, and the future of technology, this issue may be argued for many months and years to come. I'm Kathleen Strzok.
This is What's Trending Today. Chris Christie is the governor of New Jersey. Until recently, he was also a candidate for the Republican Party's presidential nomination. He suspended his campaign in February. And this week, Chris Christie became an internet meme. March 1st was Super Tuesday in the U.S. It was the most important day of the 2016 presidential election year so far, because many states held their primary elections or caucuses. On Super Tuesday, Chris Christie was no longer among the presidential candidates. He recently announced his support for businessman and presidential candidate Donald Trump. Christie joined Trump on stage Tuesday night, but he looked like he wanted to be somewhere else, and social media users took notice. Christie introduced Trump on Tuesday to a crowd of supporters in Florida. He then stood behind the candidate as Trump spoke after winning 7 states on Super Tuesday. During Trump's speech, Christie looked left, then he looked right. He looked at the back of Trump's head. He offered an awkward smile, and at times he applauded, but he mostly looked afraid and worried. And that's what's trending today. American Scott Kelly and Russian Mikhail Kornienko spent a record 340 days in space. It is the longest time any human has stayed in the International Space Station. Ann Ball has the story of their return back to Earth.
Scott Kelly and Mikhail Kornienko have their feet on the ground for the first time in 340 days. Riding in a Russian spacecraft, they made it back to Kazakhstan along with a fellow Russian cosmonaut. Theirs was a record-setting journey. It is the longest time humans have spent living on the International Space Station, ISS. Now, Kelly also holds the record for the longest time an American has spent in space, 520 days in space over 4 missions. In his last press conference from space, Kelly talked about the difficulties of living on the ISS for a year. He called it a harsh environment with only a small personal space.
You know, I've spent in the CQ I'm looking at, the crew quarters here, probably almost half the time I've been here between sleeping and working on the computer, I've spent in basically a box the size of a phone booth.
He said he feels pretty good physically, but the toughest part was being away from loved ones.
The hardest part is being isolated, in a physical sense from people on the ground that are important to you.
Kelly and Kornienko performed scientific experiments, including growing flowers and lettuce. The space station year tested how humans endure long-term space flights. What they learn will be part of NASA's Journey to Mars program. It will take astronauts at least 500 days round trip to travel to Mars and back home. During that time, they will need to grow their own food and live in small spaces with others for many months. Kelly and Kornienko monitored their bodies to see what space does to humans. There are concerns about the effects of long space flights. These include damage from radiation and loss of bone and muscle mass due to lack of gravity. Also, over time in space flight, the fluid in a person's body moves up towards the head, sometimes causing eye problems. Scott Kelly is also part of a twin study. His brother, Mark Kelly, is an identical twin and a former astronaut. During the past year, NASA has been testing both men. They will study the brothers to see how space changes a body. NASA will use these lessons learned to help the newest astronauts now being hired for the Mars journey. The space agency hopes to send humans to Mars in the 2030s. It is a mission Scott Kelly believes is possible. If we can dream it, he said from space, we can do it if we really want to. I'm Ann Ball.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.